Welcome to ACB Radio's Main Menu Live. Opinions expressed during the show do not reflect the views of ACB Radio or the American Council of the Blind, its members, employees, or board of directors. If you would like to participate in the live show at 2 hours Universal on Wednesdays, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Main Menu Live this week. We're here live for 2 hours, and here in the United States, it's Super Tuesday, and hoping all of you got out there to vote, and hoping that it was an accessible voting experience, that's for sure. Tonight, we're going to be talking all about the ATIA conference that happened in Florida. We have a panel of people who were attending that conference, and Daryl and I will speak with them. We'll play some excerpts from that conference when they were there. And we're also going to talk about GW Micro tonight. They announced scripting for WindowEyes version 7.0, and during tonight's presentation, we're going to demonstrate for you the Winamp scripts written by me that Doug Joffre demonstrated for everybody. I cannot speak tonight. Well, before we get into all of that, let's kick things off tonight with our Access Watch review from Jamie Pauls, and then we'll introduce our panel right after that.
In this week's Access Watch review, I'd like to talk about a feature found in Kurzweil version 11. I teach a music appreciation class, and this semester I'm using a new edition of the textbook. The book is available in PDF files. I've been using JAWS and or WindowEyes with Adobe Reader to view these files, and while that works pretty well, there have been times when I've had Adobe Reader crash on me, and I wasn't liking the presentation of the file particularly well. It's not marked up for accessibility. I decided to bring the file into Kurzweil version 11 and try reading it that way, and I was pleased with the results. Kurzweil is very intelligent in how it processes the file, the order in which it places things on a page, and its excellent ability to highlight large amounts of text and copied them to the clipboard and then paste them into another document has made it possible for me to take chunks of text such as listening guides and insert them into my own class notes. So, if you are a Kurzweil user and you haven't played with the PDF recognition areas of the program, I would encourage you to do so. Come visit us at www.accesswatch.info and check out our blog at http://accesswatch.wordpress.com. Have a great week.
You're listening to Main Menu Live, airing at 2 hours Universal on Wednesday. To participate in the show, please call toll-free 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333.
We'll be opening those phone lines here in just a couple of minutes. Without further ado, let's bring in Daryl Shandro. Hello, Daryl. How's it going?
Good evening, everybody. It's going really well, and we have an exciting show coming right up.
That's right. We certainly do. And let's go ahead and give everybody the contact information.
Certainly. If you want to call us by phone, you can certainly do that. Dial 866-400-5333. That's 866-400-5333. You may add us to your MSN Windows Live Messenger contact list and chat with us that way. That address is mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. Don't forget to check out Twitter. If you're signed up with them, you can go to twitter.com/mainmenu. That's twitter.com/mainmenu. Finally, if you'd like to check out the blog, we have a Main Menu blog, which is available at mainmenu.acbradio.org. That's mainmenu.acbradio.org.
That's right. Tonight, The site Blind Bargains had a number of people that went out to the ATIA conference, and we asked them to come on to Main Menu Live this week. And now I've known Jason Meta for a very, very long time. Hi, Jason. How's it going?
Oh, doing very well.
Oh, good. Now you and I go way back to the Fred Brucker days.
Yeah, oh, wow. Going back to when I was just a teenager writing macro.
That's right. Macros for Commo. And for those that don't know what Commo was a communications application.
DOS.
That's right, for DOS, that's right. And I called Fred one day and said, hey, man, can you make this right out to the BIOS so that screen readers can use it? And he was like, well, you know how soft-spoken he was. And he says, well, I'll look into it. And he called me back in about a half an hour and said, well, I got a build for you. Can you hook up something so I can upload it to you with Z-Modem or Kermit or something?
Wow.
Well, yeah, those were the days, huh?
And yeah, definitely.
Yeah, and that just started everything off. And, so you and I got acquainted that way, and I don't know if you knew. Did you know that Fred died?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I had heard that on the list, the Commo list, and it actually really affected me. He really was a pretty important influence to me. And
this is just, I never realized you were the one to make the that program accessible.
I called him and remember the SFI entry in the configuration file, Commo.cfd.
Oh yeah, I remember that.
Yeah, SFI.
Quite a few blind users ended up using the program.
Yeah, speech friendly interface is what he called it.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there you go. A little bit of history there, and then you wrote a BBS, if I recall correctly, didn't you?
I didn't. I know I ran one. I wrote Internet and a Macro, which...
Oh, that's right, that's right, yeah.
If you search, someone else did the BBS. I did Internet and a Macro, which if you search online, you can still find.
I know. I wrote some stuff, too, and I wrote a thing for WordPerfect a number of years ago called BASIC, B-A-S-I-K, the Braille and Speech Interface Keyboard. And one day I was on Google and I thought, you know, I'm going to see if I can find that thing. And I actually found a zip file of it back in from 1988. And
wow.
I was pretty embarrassed looking at that. But oh, boy, that was something. So
my colleague was one in 1988.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it was very interesting that Commo... it came out sort of at the end of the whole BBS era. It was in the mid-90s when that was really big.
Well,
yeah,
it was
the last gasp.
The speech-friendly part of it came out towards
the
end. Yeah, it was out for a long time, actually, prior to that. And it was great because, you know, he believed in having very clean, you know, interfaces. And it was all written in assembly language, and he worked for Intel. And yeah, it was. He was. I'll tell you, if he were still alive, he would be someone that should get a huge award because he really made a major influence on providing access when it was not very easy to do that at that time. He was pretty incredible.
Definitely.
Well, yeah. Anyway, so tonight we asked Jason to come on and your cohort Matt. Now I don't know Matt. Why don't you introduce yourself?
I'm a student at Western. Like JJ pointed out, I was one. You guys were all in A6. Jason trying to get to to go back and use one, but you know so.
Now, are you blind, Matt?
Yes, I'm totally blind.
Oh, you are too. Okay, I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. All right, cool. So let's talk briefly about the conference, and then we'll get to specifics. We, Daryl and I, picked four, Daryl, things that we were going to play from the audio archives, but let's just start by having you guys kind of describe to us. First of all, what was ATIA like? Have both of you been to CSUN, by the way?
No.
Okay, so yeah, maybe we can kind of talk about it from a difference between CSUN and ATIA.
Yeah.
My understanding
fact, that was my. Go ahead.
My understanding about ATIA is that it's a lot more laid back. From talking to Doug, he said that the number of people that attend presentations is a lot lower, therefore allowing more interaction and things like that. And I get the feeling that it's a little more laid back than CSUN. CSUN is incredibly hectic, and they don't give you enough time to get from hotel to hotel, and it's going to be even worse this year, I think. But
I will say, yeah, I mean, I wasn't, I, you're right, I have nothing to compare to, but the atmosphere was probably more laid back than I expected for a conference of professionals, mostly educators probably. And I was a little bit surprised, and I had people did comment to me that the atmosphere was pretty elite compared to other conferences.
So what, how was the exhibits and who was all there? Pretty much everybody in the industry.
Everyone
was
there.
I was probably
there. Pretty
right?
much everyone. I think I can only think of a couple people who weren't there. JJ might be able to help me. Sendero Group was not there. I'm trying to think of anyone else in the AT industry who wasn't there, and I really can't think of anyone.
Interesting.
Yeah, that's basically about it. I mean, as far as the people that make software, they were all represented. Anybody that you would expect to be there. I don't know how it compares to CSUN, but I mean, anybody I was looking for was there.
Oh, good. Okay. So, what did you think the highlights were? If you were to just kind of give a basic high level overview of what do you think the big thing was at ATIA this year?
The KNFB Reader Mobile, I think, definitely was one of the bigger highlights. I mean, and it was definitely advertised a lot. And people were coming up to me and really were like, "Hey, have you seen the new KNFB Reader Mobile?" And so.
That the WindowEyes thing would probably be the next. Yep. Those two, the KNFB Reader and the WindowEyes scripting, those were both things that we knew about before we went down there. Mm-hmm. So those we were looking for. The WindowEyes scripting was leaked, as you know, a week or two earlier, and the KNFB Reader Mobile was leaked in the ATIA. in the ATIA schedule agenda, which we put up on Blind Market as soon as we saw it.
Right. Yeah. And then you
The WindowEyes, I think the WindowEyes thing was indirectly linked that way too.
Yeah, it was
mentioned on the list.
Yeah, it's been there since November.
Right.
And so people were kind of noticing it but really I think they kept it pretty quiet in reference to the kind of the details and the strategy behind their scripting, and we'll get to that in a few minutes, but
the first I really saw about the scripting was when they put out the announcement for the presentations. Those two, and then the third one, which is the one we weren't really expecting, was the accessibility is a right .org. That was the third thing that really caught our attention, I think.
Yeah.
That's one that I find kind of exciting.
Yeah. I remember one of the people from the Air Foundation came up to me and she was like, "Hey, you want a free screener?" And it kind of threw me back a little bit. Like,
what? That's pretty funny. Yeah, leave it to Mike's people, man. Get out there and hustle, which is great. That's good. That's important. So, okay, well, let's kick things off here with KNFB Reader. So, did you guys get a chance to get your hands on it?
I did.
What'd you think of it?
It's basically
really
yeah. It's small. It's a Nokia N82 phone. Which is a candy bar style phone.
Candy bar style phone.
Okay.
It's the size of what you would expect from a phone. The buttons are really tactile. So
they're somewhat large. They're very easy to feel. It feels solid in your hand. It's not plasticky or anything. It's a solid phone, which you would expect for $500. I mean, it's definitely worth the price. So.
Mm-hmm.
And the N82 has a built-in GPS receiver, does it not?
Yes, it has a built-in GPS receiver, so it's the assisted GPS receiver.
It does. If it's anything like the GPS for the N95, though, I think you'd be better off still using an external GPS.
Yeah,
though.
Assisted GPS technology isn't terribly accurate because it uses cell towers.
Oh, it doesn't have real GPS.
I don't think it's real GPS. It might be,
if it
but
is, it's not very sensitive.
Interesting.
Yeah,
interesting.
Yeah.
So now next week we're going to have Earl Harrison on, and in the first hour on Main Menu, and he's going to talk to us all about the KNFB Reader, and it's kind of interesting. He told me that Kanan, now I'm not sure who, I don't know if it's the NFB or if it's Kurzweil. Do you guys know who's, I know there's dealers, but I mean, is it the NFB or is it Kurzweil that's, or is it both that are selling it? In other words, who do you call? Do you guys
KNFB know? Reading Technologies is a private company now.
Okay, it is. Okay. Okay.
Yeah, it was for, I mean, it's kind of, there's oversight by Kurzweil and there's oversight by NFB.
Okay.
But it's a private company.
Okay. Well, it's kind of interesting because one of the things that Earl told me about, and he'll talk more about this next week, is that they are restricting the dealers by region, which is kind of interesting.
Huh. Mm-hmm.
So they can only sell within their region. They cannot go outside of that region and sell product. So we'll find out more about that next week.
That doesn't sound very progressive.
No, I thought that was kind of interesting. Well, let's go ahead and listen to the coverage that Jason did at ATIA all about the KNFB reader, and then we'll come back and we'll move on to the next topic and get any other comments that you guys had. All right, so let's do that now.
All right.
We are here with James Gashel, who is the Vice President of Business Development for KNFB Reading Technology. And there's been a lot of talk this week about a brand new product, and he's going to tell us all about it right now.
Well, thank you very much, JJ. Our product is the KNFB Reader Mobile, and this is made by KNFB Reading Technology. Our company is a combination of the efforts of Ray Kurzweil. Ray is our CEO, and the National Federation of the Blind. And the National Federation of the Blind has done a considerable amount of work in supporting this technology and providing consumer testing and advice of the what the technology needs to do. So it's important to have the specifications from the consumers. So that's what we do at KNFB Reading Technology. In 2006, we announced and started selling a reader called the Kurzweil National Federation of the Blind Reader, which is the world's first portable reading device
right.
that you could carry around. Well, on Monday, January 28, 2008, we announced release of the KNFB Reader Mobile. And this is what its name implies. Our other reader might be mobile, but it's bigger. It's about 13 ounces. This reader weighs 4 ounces. It actually is a cell phone, and it is software running on a cell phone, and it makes it possible to have all of the functionality of our portable reader on a truly mobile device. And in addition to the features of the reader, which I just said is the, you know, full functionality, you snap pictures, you read print, you save files, you can retrieve saved files, all sorts of things you can do with it. You can read U.S. currency, etc., etc. You have the full functionality of the telephone. You can do email, you can surf the web, you can use the music player, you can do podcasting, you can use the calculator, you can keep the calendar, all your contact lists, and you can even make a phone call on it. You don't have to activate the phone as a phone. It functions as a reader whether you activate it as a phone or not.
Sure.
But this is truly a more mobile device. I carry it around in my shirt pocket and use it all the time.
Absolutely. I know of a lot of people that did purchase what's now being called the Classic when it first came out, and there's a lot of great uses for that device as well. What would you say are the major, other than of course it being in a phone, the major differences in functionality between the Classic and the mobile?
Well, the major differences in functionality stem from the fact that we have more keys available on the mobile. So it's easier to create a simple user interface. That's what we've done. So whereas the what we now call the KNFB Reader Classic has three different major modes. It has shooting mode, reader documents, and user settings. We don't have any of those. Now, we can read documents and we have user settings, but our reader on the mobile comes up at a prompt that we call the ready prompt, and that you might compare that to shooting mode.
Sure.
It is always ready to take a picture. And once you're reading text to cancel that reading and return to the ready prompt, all you do is press star. So it's very straightforward to get back to the ready prompt and just take pictures and read. You know, that's the major feature. Another one which I really like is you don't have to switch into a special mode for reading U.S. currency. All you do is have a bill available. Just press zero on the telephone keypad after you've aimed the reader at that U.S. currency, and it'll tell you what it is. You don't have to shift into a currency mode.
Sure.
The other one I like is that, you know, we used to have, we said three reading modes. Bills and memos, books, articles, and labels, and U.S. currency. Well, we did away with all the reading modes. We have two reading formats. One is books, articles, and labels, and one is bills and memos. But these are the image is really the same image, and so when you're reading that image, and if it doesn't present real well, you can easily press 4 on the keypad to reprocess the image in the opposite format. But you do not change your format like we do on the KNFB Reader Classic. I think another good feature is that it's easy to change settings, like audio settings. It's very easy to go in and speed it up or slow it down. It's very easy to change the length of the text that you would read by pressing right or left arrow. You can go sentence, line, paragraph, word, character, and it's very easy to get in and change those and move back out. Another feature I like about this is for people who can read large print.
Oh, right.
It displays on the screen. And we didn't display on the screen in the Classic. But on this one, we have the large type displayed on the screen with a moving highlighter that will read as the speech speaks. And the words that have already been read display in blue, and the words that have yet to be read display in black. And then the highlighter moves through the text. So, and it's instant large print.
I think
that's really a good feature of this. It combines your audio and your large print in a way that really helps. So, I think those
that's quite a list.
Yeah, I mean, it's a big list, really.
Sure. Notice something, I think, in one of the demonstrations on Monday. I'm not sure if this is totally a new thing, about how it mentioned that some of the text was cut off.
Yes, and I guess I should have identified that as sort of a new feature. We take pictures a little bit closer to the page with the KNFB Reader Mobile. And so a person might want to use what we call the field of view report more aggressively, but if you don't, if you just want to snap a picture and see how it comes out, you can easily do that. And in the sequence of, say, 15 to 20 seconds when it processes, it will tell you if there is text cut off on left or text cut off on right or text top or text bottom that's cut off. Well, if you don't care about all the document, let's say it says text cut off on bottom. Well, all you want to do is read the top of the document. Just go ahead and listen to it. But if you want to be sure you read every word on that document, then you would want to cancel that image and take another one. So you have the option, but it tells you if any text is cut off.
There's been some questions going on about what the difference in speed is and the difference in accuracy, and I've heard a couple of different answers to that. So what would you...
Well, I think the accuracy is essentially the same, but it may not always be the same. For example, if you take pictures at too far a distance, and by that I mean 12 inches or further, let's say, the accuracy on the mobile will be less. But if you're in that sweet spot from, say, 9.5 to 12 inches, the accuracy will be essentially the same. You might actually find some occasions when the accuracy on the mobile is better than the accuracy on the Classic, and vice versa. They're in a range of probably about 5%, and sometimes one will be better and sometimes the other will be better, but it is a pretty close range.
The actual reading engine software, is it similar or is it the same?
It's entirely different.
Oh, okay.
We reinvented the reader.
I see. Right.
I know that a lot of the prompts may sound the same, but that's the user interface.
That's all that's the same.
But under the hood,
right.
We reinvented the reader.
So essentially, once a user of the Classic retrains themselves a bit that they need to take pictures closer, they basically should be all set.
They should be all set,
right.
But they definitely have to take pictures closer.
Sure, sure. What about users of the Classic? I know there's an upgrade path. Now, will there still be updates available at all for the Classic, or are we basically done?
Well, I don't think that there will be many. There may be one. There's one thing we really did on the mobile that we might be able to move over to the Classic, and that is that we actually start reading faster, and the processing time is faster. Now, on the mobile, it doesn't appear a lot faster, but if you put that same set of algorithms into the Classic, possibly the Classic would process at almost lightning speed, because it has somewhat of a more powerful processor.
Sure.
In it. So I do think there could be a potential advantage for users of the Classic based on this development, but I don't see us adding new features to the Classic. It isn't practical. There are a finite number of them out there, and
sure,
they are basically sold.
So you now would just be selling refurbished units from the trade-in.
And so there's not a lot of economics in it for us in trying to put a lot of effort into the Classic.
So for our people listening, this is running on an N82, a Nokia phone with a 5-megapixel camera, and is it a 400 megahertz processor?
I don't know.
I believe it's somewhere around. So I guess the potential, of course, exists for newer phones.
Yes.
Come out and newer, faster processors. It's all just going
It does. And,
yes.
And certainly that, and other phones, better cameras,
yes.
Lots of things can change.
Absolutely.
As we go forward.
What's the one feature that you can't wait to see be made available, but this isn't there yet?
Well, I'd like to have, outdoor recognition, signs, actually recognizing things outdoors. Interestingly enough, there has been some success at reading signs with this. So I wouldn't want to say that it won't read any signs. In fact, we're at a conference, technology conference. I took a picture of our booth, and it read me all the words that people see when they come to our booth.
Oh, nice.
So I thought that was very nice. I stood back about 10 feet and snapped a picture, and it did it. But there's that. I would like to see it identify products better. So we're going to be working on software that teaches the reader what a can of soda like a Coke looks like. I mean, every Coke can looks the same. The reader can certainly learn what a Coke can looks like. A bottle of Tylenol or things like that. So it wouldn't necessarily have to read the words to know what a product is.
Right.
So we're going to work on that, and I think that'll be a great advance. Eventually, recognizing people will be possible.
Right.
And I think we should be doing that.
We were talking earlier in the booth, actually, about how some of the other software products create a user community where if one person were to recognize a product or a person's face, they could send that in.
We'll be seeing that.
Sure.
And images if somebody met with the president and you took his picture, there's the president. It'd all be there in the database.
Sure. That's great. Why don't we talk about how to purchase and where people can get more information?
Well, how to purchase would be through dealers. They are affiliated with KNFB Reading Technology. You should find our website, which is knfbreader.com. One word, knfbreader.com. And then go to the how to purchase page, how to purchase, and you'll find a directory of our dealers, and we cover every state. So look your state up and find the dealer or dealers that serve your state and contact them, and they're all ready to have the reader available. And it's basically a turnkey thing that we offer. The dealer will obtain the phone, configure it, set everything up, and you'll be good to go with the reader when you get it.
And it will be available when, this new product?
February 15th.
Absolutely. Well, James Gashel, it has been an absolute pleasure. I do thank you for the time.
Well, thank you, JJ. It's been a privilege.
Thank you.
All right, we're back, and a little bit of technical difficulty here. Daryl, why don't you go ahead and take it here. One of the questions that I had to you guys, JJ and Matt, has to do with the speed of the new reader. One of the things that Daryl noticed on, and actually you wrote about, Daryl, on your blog one time, was that you found that the older classic reader was kind of slow.
I would say the new one is probably 5 to 10 seconds faster. You're now down to maybe, we timed it out at, what do you say, Matt, 15 to 20 seconds?
Yeah, 15 to 20 seconds. I actually had my stopwatch going during the press conference. But it was about 16, 17 seconds on average.
So it's more reasonable. Not lightning, but reasonable.
I can't help but to feel a little, to still feel a little skeptical. And before I go on further, you know, let me say that, of course, I haven't seen one of the new readers, so I'm hoping to be able to check some of this out on experience. But we're talking about doing optical character recognition here, and even on a PC with a flatbed scanner, it's pretty good, but it's not there's still quite a bit of wiggle room there. There's still quite a bit of error. So I guess my feeling about technologies like KNFB Reader is that I feel hopeful, but I'm not ready to become an early adopter yet, because I noticed that it sounded like Jim was saying that the processor in the classic KNFB Reader is more powerful.
It would be because it's
the N82.
It is actually, because the KNFB Reader Classic runs it's a Lux PDA, which has a 624 megahertz processor.
Right.
So it is a faster processor in the Classic.
You know, it just really surprises me that they didn't go with maybe one of those OCO wearable computers like the Smalltalk Ultra is based on. Something that's a little fuller as far as processing.
That appeals to me. I'll be honest, I'm definitely considering purchasing one of these. The thing that appeals to me is the fact that it is in my phone, and it won't be another device that I have to carry around. Now, it depends what you're looking for. Will it read a novel? Maybe not the greatest. I will still have my flatbed for that. But if if someone hands me a piece of paper in class and I can take a picture of it and at least get the essence of what's on the screen, maybe not exactly every single character, but I think what I'm more going for is the essence, and I think that's something that I really haven't been able to do before, and that's what excites me about this.
Yeah, but what about this? What about this, right? So what, maybe kind of what I would like to do is I'd like to get it. Say I get a Smalltalk Ultra, right?
Yeah.
Let me hook up a real nice, digital camera to it. 5 megapixel, or I'm sure there'll be better coming down the pike. Either hook it up or use Bluetooth. Let me run a piece of software on there, and that's got to be a lot more powerful, right?
That's actually possible now. The latest version, and I wonder if this is somewhat a result of the Canopy, the latest version of OmniPage, which is 16, they directly mentioned that they are now better processing for digital camera images. I've never really tested that out, but it seems to me that might actually do pretty well.
Very interesting.
Right now.
Fascinating. We've opened up the phone lines, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, if you would like to call in and ask any questions. And what about the price? And then we'll move on to the next vendor. But what do you guys think of the price? Now, it's varying based on dealers and everything, but I think that...
And it also varies, Jeff, if you have the original, the classic or not. I have the Classic, so for me to upgrade, it would only cost $500 for the software and an additional price of the phone. So for me it's a no-brainer. I mean,
sure,
you know,
yeah,
right.
I mean,
$1,595 plus the phone. Otherwise, so it's come down. I mean, it was $3,500 2 years ago, and if you know, we dropped to $2,500 last year, and down to $1,500 now. So it's becoming more reasonable. Best value in the world, maybe not, but it's more reasonable now.
We have a caller. Tom has called in, and he has a question for everybody. So let's bring him on in. Hello, Tom. How's it going tonight?
Not bad. How about you?
We're doing great. We'll let you ask your question, and then you can listen on the air if that's okay.
All right. This question is basically meant to you, Jai.
Okay.
I got Vista with the newest version of Jaws demo, all right?
Okay.
And I go out to abc.replay, and when I, like, click on Wednesday to listen to your show, it can't display the web page. What's happening?
Yeah,
I know we're looking into that.
Yeah, we're looking into that. We got your email on that, and we'll get back to you on that, okay?
All right, I hope I didn't interrupt you.
No, that's okay. This just isn't really the forum, you know, for this specifically here. But we'll get back to you on that. We're looking into that, and we'll let you know, all right?
All right, your show's great. Thanks.
Okay, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. Now, I know, for example, Earl Harrison is selling the phone and the reader, I think, for $24.95.
Yep, and he also includes a copy of either Talks or Mobile Speak in the deal.
Right, right.
So
really, that's not too bad. I mean, the phone itself is, what, $500, almost $600? And
$489 on Blind Bargains, right?
Yeah, $489.
There you go. Get that Blind Bargain in there. But is that how much it costs, even with discounts from a vendor? You know, like AT&T or T-Mobile or one of those guys?
The phone, that particular phone, AT&T, it's supported by AT&T, but you cannot, as you probably know, AT&T only has specific phones that you can actually buy with a new contract through them. And
yep.
N82 is not currently one of them.
Yeah, but I just actually checked earlier today, and the N82 is not a phone that you can get through AT&T as a contract, so...
Oh, bummer. Okay, Daryl, why don't you go ahead and ask them about the... I think we're moving to Code Factory next, is that right?
Right, yeah. So this is kind of... I put these together because this is sort of related, right? So you can have Mobile Speak on your Nokia N82. So, plus we can talk about... you know, Bookshare support on the new Mobile Speak. What did you guys think of the? Did you guys get to try out the new Mobile Speak? And
actually, I did not specifically get to try out. I didn't rush to try out a Mobile Speak phone with Bookshare since I have Mobile Speak here already.
Right.
But the Bookshare support is only at this point on the smartphone and PDA models. I asked them about Symbian, they say it's coming.
Mm-hmm.
It sounds like it should work pretty well, though. There's a, you know, the all the standard features you would expect from a Daisy player are there. Plus, they give you the unpack utility, which is definitely useful.
You know, that's the other thing about these phones. One of the reasons I think I'm not rushing out to get one of the Nokia phones is, you know, I like to have a lot of connectivity, and I also, you know, sometimes I'd like to be able to. You know, establish VPN connections and things like that for work, or to connect back to home and so on and so forth. And a lot of that stuff seems to be a lot more capable on the smartphones or PDAs that run Windows Mobile than it is on Symbian. Certainly, it's a lot easier to hook up and synchronize and all that stuff.
It depends. A lot of it, I think, is just that we're just not used to how to set it up. Like, for instance, with my Symbian phone, I had to go out and find an application to do Skype and another application to do listen to radio, and it's not the same ones that we're used to looking for. So some of it is just you just need to find new programs that do work, and they are accessible. The N82 does have Wi-Fi, so I'm not specifically sure about VPN support, but that's another plus about that particular phone.
Oh, very good. Here we have Bob on the phone, and we're going to head back to KNFB reader land here. And he had two questions. Bob, we're going to let you ask your questions, and then we'll let you listen on the air. Go right ahead, sir.
Okay, just two quick ones. One with the KNFB reader software. I wonder if it has any color identification built in to tell you what color things are. And then the other one is when using something like Talk software on the phone, if the reader starts reading, I'm wondering if the two software applications will fight with each other for who gets to talk and who doesn't.
Okay, guys. Now, I don't know if you guys would have had an opportunity to actually play with the phone, you know, that much while you were there or not, but what do you think?
To answer the second question, when Mr. Gashel was demonstrating the phone during the press conference the previous Monday, he was actually running a copy of MobileSpeak on his phone. Now, MobileSpeak did come up a couple times during when the reader software was running. However, when the reader started reading the document, a couple documents, MobileSpeak was silent. So,
As for the color identification, nothing specifically in the KNFB reader software does color identification. I don't know about Talk. I know MobileSpeak has a product called Mobile Color Recognizer that you could purchase for, I think, about $50. I'm not sure if Talk has one as well, but you'd have to purchase a separate program for color identification.
Bob, I would suggest that you call in next week and ask Earl that question, because actually Earl's pretty familiar with the Talk line too. And if I don't want to make a commitment here, but I thought I remember hearing something about Talk having something similar for color identification, but I could be mistaken on that. It's been too long that I heard that, so it's difficult to say. Okay. Let's see. Do we want to go ahead and then play the Code Factory piece, Daryl?
I think we're ready for that.
Okay.
There you go.
Okay, good. And then we're going to move next, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, Daryl, but I think we're moving next to GW Micro. And
yes, we are.
And they certainly had a lot to talk about. So, I got a nice surprise in my inbox today from JJ even. And we'll talk a little bit about that too. And it was a pleasant surprise indeed. So let's go ahead and listen to this, and then we'll dig into GW Micro's scripting announcement. Well, assuming it will play. We had a problem with station here. Let me...
It's number 7 if it's still set up.
It is. Station decided to die on us here tonight, so that wasn't very friendly of it. But I think we're okay now. Let's see.
We are here in Orlando with some representatives of Code Factory, and they're going to introduce themselves and tell us about some of the products that they are bringing here at the conference. Go ahead, please.
Sure. My name is Greg Gladman. I'm the Chief Technical Officer for Code Factory.
And my name is Ia Geddes, and I'm the International Sales Director of Code Factory.
Thank you. We have a lot of products that you are releasing, have released, are in different cycles, betas, public betas, private betas. What do you think is your greatest new product at this point?
Well, I think the one that we presented yesterday is pretty exciting. It's the Mobile Daisy Player that we're currently evaluating and getting ready for a public beta. We're planning on supporting a lot of different Daisy formats, audiobooks, textbooks, combination of both, with the idea that you can just take an audiobook or a textbook in Daisy format from any of a number of providers, copy it to your mobile phone or PDA, and just start playing from there and do all the normal Daisy functions like bookmarking, changing playback speed, changing all the speech parameters for textbooks. And so I think that's something that people have been looking forward to for a long time.
And on that, you've announced a collaboration with Bookshare.
Right, that's right. Maybe you can talk a little bit about
please.
That.
Yes, there will be a collaboration with Bookshare. We actually worked on a reader which is currently available for Windows Mobile, for MobileSpeak for smartphones. And this with this reader, yes, Bookshare books can be read, and you can have a subscription for Bookshare, download books from there, and play them with our reader, which is integrated in MobileSpeak smartphone.
Oh, that's great. So that's for the smartphone. What about for the Symbian phones? Is there, you anticipating that coming in the future?
We've been talking about it. There's no concrete plan for it yet, although it seems to be a natural step in the e-book direction we've been taking lately. So we'll be talking to them in the future about it and see if we can do something on Symbian as well.
Yeah, there must be a lot of portability between the different operating systems. You notice when a feature ends up in one of your products and eventually it'll end up in the others. That seems to happen quite a bit.
Right, that's something we've been trying to do lately more and more. The first big step we took with that was in the Braille support. Right now the Braille support between Symbian and Windows Mobile is common source code. So if we fix a bug in one platform, it's automatically fixed in the other. So that's,
sure.
That's a philosophy we're trying to do with the Daisy Book Reader as well. The Daisy Parser and the audio playback are share a lot of the same common code. And in fact, both come from a Windows PC prototype that we did, and now we're now porting that to Symbian and to Windows Mobile. So
sure.
The idea is that we can use one source code to improve both product lines.
Sure, and on that same note, we notice also the user-centered licensing. That's one of the probably most recognized moves in assistive technology in the last year.
Yeah, I think that's really an important step that you can use our software on one device. Then if you get a new device, you can just deactivate the old device and activate our software in the new one. I think that's quite a revolutionary step.
Is it harder to implement for the Symbian phones than the other platforms?
It's a different platform. The tools are fairly different, so I think it depends on how much experience you have in each one. I think someone that comes from a Symbian platform might think that it seems more natural to them. But I think some of the platform security restrictions that they have on Symbian make the process a bit slower.
Yes, for Windows Mobile, we already had automatic trial system that you can download the software on a PDA or on a Windows Mobile smartphone, connect it to your computer and to internet, and then it connects automatically to our server, and you get a 30-day trial. For Symbian, that's currently not possible yet. So for us, it was maybe more logical to start with Windows Mobile to elaborate the user-centered licensing system, so you can connect directly from your PDA to your computer and to our server and deactivate or activate the license.
Sure. There's a lot of new features and exciting things coming out from Code Factory, and we also have the public beta of MobileSpeak Pocket 2 now.
Right.
What's the what would you say is the greatest new feature of that product?
Do you have an idea?
I know there's a long list,
right,
about 50 of them.
Exactly, there is a long list. I'm not sure what the most popular one would be. I'd have to go back and take a look at them to try to pick a favorite, what most people would look forward to the most. Since I deal mostly on a day-to-day basis with more of the Symbian side of things, I wouldn't be as familiar with that off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think that it's always that first 1%, something is more important than something else. For the other one, something else is important. So,
right.
Yeah, it's a bit hard to say. Yeah.
I think the Bookshare, the BRF reader support will be an interesting thing for a lot of people, and once it's available on the for Pocket as well.
Since you have the Bookshare support, I guess the next natural progression is, are you considering RFB and D support?
We'll be talking to them about what's possible. Our philosophy is generally to support as many providers as possible, including the ones that have authentication and encryption for their content, which most people understandably do. And so we'll be talking to all the providers to see if there's anything we can do to bring their books to the mobile devices as well.
I have got a couple questions, and people have been wondering about the web browser support for the newer Symbian phones.
Right.
Do you have any anticipation on when that might be possible? Is there, what is holding that up right now?
It's actually the change in the web browser itself on Symbian. They've implemented a completely new browser, which uses a sort of a mouse cursor-based navigation. So for a sighted user, it's great because on the screen, you actually have an arrow cursor just like you would with a mouse, and you can move around the screen freely. Obviously, for a non-sighted user, partially sighted user, that's not the best solution. So, we've been looking at it right now. We're working on it for a couple of our programmers. It's their top priority, in fact, for Symbian right now. It won't be in the beta that's coming out in the next week or so, but it will be in the next release. I'm fairly certain. So,
Okay, that's great.
Yeah.
And I noticed you do have a really open beta process, so definitely seem to be welcoming to people trying out your product. There's always having public betas. The Daisy Player is in a public beta now, or will be soon?
Will be soon, yeah. We're collecting information for people who would like to test it, and we need their phone information, their contact information, and we'd like to get it into the hands of as many people as possible to get feedback on features, especially something like Daisy, which is everyone has, you know, coming from a hardware Daisy Player experience, everyone has their favorite feature, and we'd like to get people's help in prioritizing those.
Sure. As luck would have it, you'll probably benefit quite a bit from the release of the new Canopy Reader Mobile, since that is using a Symbian phone, and many people will be looking to purchase MobileSpeak. For someone who's a new user coming to the platform, what's a piece of advice perhaps that you could give to people maybe who are not used to using a talking mobile phone?
I think the main thing is to start with the basics, the things that you really need to communicate, send text messages and things like that. And we try to design the product so that they're discoverable, so you can get to those basic things easily. And then as you use it, you start discovering more and more advanced features that you didn't realize you could do and didn't realize you needed or wanted, but then find and eventually really useful in your daily life. So I would say just focus on the basic things. Don't try to let the complexity of everything you can possibly do overwhelm you at first. And kind of learn as you go, essentially, would be my advice to anyone just starting out.
Regarding the KNFB reader, I must say that I have seen it for the first time here at the ATIA exhibition, and I was really, really impressed that it can read so tiny little letters. You can just take a picture, and I think it's really great software, and it really works perfect with MobileSpeak, and we are also collaborating with KNFB there, that the software works really well together with our software, so you can have MobileSpeak on the NAT2 and then you can have the reader.
Sure. The phone is becoming a really powerful device too, also with the GPS software, Wayfinder, available. Do you think it's reached the point now where the phone can totally replace the need for another dedicated blindness PDA?
I would think for a PDA it would. I mean, there is always a need for a laptop computer or something when you're at home or at work. But I think for someone that's traveling around, I think a single device can handle pretty much anything you need to do at this point.
Yeah, you don't have to carry around several devices anymore, so you can have the Daisy Player on the phone and, for example, or other features.
Right,
so
a small braille device for people who want that. Those devices are really small now.
Sure. Where do you envision either phones or your software in a year or two? It seems like things are moving at such a fast clip these days.
Right.
Yes.
Well, I think that the technology is advancing so fast that I think the applications themselves will get a lot simpler to use, because the phone can handle more elaborate interface, more natural interfaces. So speech will get better. Speech recognition will become important. The camera obviously is getting much better, as you can see by the text readers. And so I think those things will get more natural. The interaction with the phone will get a lot more natural than it has been in the past.
What about for new users? It seems that there are so many phones out there, it can seem so overwhelming, and you're always adding new phone models. What recommendations do you have for people who are just looking to purchase their first phone?
Well, for people who are getting their phone through their operator, the first step would be to see which phones their operator supports. Obviously, there are a huge range of phones out there, but not all of them are supported by all the carriers. So the first step would be to see which ones your carrier supports. And then if you go to our website, you can actually see, based on the platform you want, which phones we offer and support, along with the characteristics for each one. And so I would say that's a great resource for
people. So which phones we recommend for each platform.
Right. So between our website, which has a list of supported phones, and it's a great resource, and then going with your carrier and cross-referencing to see which ones are actually available in your area, it would be the best way to start.
Sure. Why don't we close by giving out that website address and any other contact information that you'd like to give out?
Sure. It's www.codefactory.es. You can find the information there, and if you need more information, you can email info@codefactory.es with any specific questions.
And there's also several mailing lists. What is .cat?
Oh, .cat is Catalonia. It's the part of Spain that we're located in, where Barcelona is. It's sort of the province of Barcelona.
So oh, okay. That's great.
It's our local domain.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to both of you.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Very interesting, .cat. I heard that before. I heard this before, but I didn't catch that before. That was kind of interesting. I've kind of a little piece of knowledge there. Now, so I have MobileSpeak. I moved to it from Talks, and I must say I really do like the user-centered licensing. It's quite nice.
Yeah, it's not on the Symbian phones yet. I'm kind of waiting for it. I came in a different way. I moved to MobileSpeak from a talking LG phone, so I went from Harmony.
Oh, wow, okay. Yeah, I get it. Okay, yeah. Interesting.
Yeah, Caroline has a question.
Okay, go ahead.
And she says, you know, with all this stuff we're putting on these phones now, we have KNFB reader software, we're using the camera, we have GPS, we have MobileSpeak, you know, we have Bookshare. What's the battery life like now on these things?
You're looking at about, most of them are maybe 4 to 5 hours. I think as long as you charge your phone, you got to get into the habit. When I had my old phone, I just made calls. I would charge it 2 or 3 times a week, and that would be good. But now I'm starting to get into the habit, like, I got to remember, I have to charge it every night. And as long as I do that, I seem to be fine. I might buy a second battery just in case, but I think if you charge it once a day for normal use, you should be fine.
Well,
to add on what JJ said, me having the KNFB Reader Classic, I'm so excited to get the KNFB Reader Mobile because that's only one thing I have to charge. Whereas with the KNFB Reader Classic, I had my phone to charge, I had the PDA to charge, I had a camera to charge, I had another battery to charge. So I mean, I think this new technology really cuts down on the number of devices that you really need to carry in your pocket. So.
Yeah, very interesting.
It is kind of disappointing. So on Symbian, are you not able to browse the web at all right now? Is that
with the newer Symbian phones? Not yet. I guess you can with Talks. MobileSpeak, not at the moment. Mm-hmm. You could tether it to a laptop and do it that way.
Right.
But
yeah.
Not the phone.
I'll tell you though, for someone who does have a data plan, I have a Singular 3125, and it is so slow. I mean, it's great for instant messaging. I mean, it's good enough for that, really. But I find it to be so slow. Now, it could be my area, you know, that kind of a thing.
Some of it's the phone, too, because different phones will support different data plans. I have an internet radio station that streams at 128K, and I was on a bus for about an hour, hour and a half, listening to it the whole way at 128.
On which
phone?
Wow,
that's interesting.
I have an N75 right now.
Okay.
Wow, that's pretty impressive.
That
would be great. Listen to ACB Radio Interactive or something.
You could do it. Yeah, you could do it.
Wow, that's interesting. Hmm. Yeah, we had one of our DJs who just got a PacMate Omni inquiring on one of our lists about that. So Rachel hooked him up. So that was kind of neat. All right. Well, let's go ahead and move now to GW Micro and scripting. And first of all, did either one of you get a chance to attend Doug's presentation?
No. I will say we went to Asia. We're both still in college, so we went on the budget plan. It's $400 and some to register for the conference, where it's $50 to pay to get into the exhibit hall. So you can figure out what we did.
Ah, interesting. Okay. So I didn't know if Doug snuck you in or something. Okay.
I would have tried to, but our flight was about to leave.
Okay. So the only thing, I guess, that you heard, well, you've heard things since, obviously, because you're now on the beta team. But
yes.
So the things that you mainly heard from him were on the floor then when you interviewed him.
Yes.
Okay. You want to give us a quick rundown on what you learned, and then we'll listen to Doug, and then we'll dive into the Winamp scripts, which is something that it was one of a few things that he demonstrated during his presentation. And I'll talk a little bit about what things were added to Winamp due to scripting, and give everyone, keeping in mind that, of course, the scripts are beta, WindowEyes is beta, so you must consider the presentation a beta presentation. So if something happens, then, you know, just be prepared for that. But so you want to kind of give everybody the high-level overview, and then we'll listen to Doug.
Sure. WindowEyes 7.0 is having scripting support, obviously. Sounds like the public beta is going to come out around the time of CSUN in March, although, you know, of course, you never know, and GW Micro does not like giving out dates, or they're pretty infamous for not doing that. That's basically been the main discussion. He gave a couple of examples in the interview. He did mention the Winamp scripts. He also mentioned how they have created an alternate dialogue, just as an example for the ad remove programs dialogue, which makes it a lot easier to get around that. Didn't really give a lot of other specific examples of programs, but of course I'm sure that there'll be a lot that will be possible and probable with the scripts. Now, as a side note, I did an interview with Dancing Dots, and I was talking to Brian Smart, and I asked him about the scripting in WindowEyes, and Bill McCann were saying that they are definitely going to take a look at it, and they might be interested in expanding their products over to WindowEyes because of this. So that's definitely an interesting development as well.
Well, one of the things that he talked about, and we'll hear about this in just a second, is iTunes. And
yes.
So I know iTunes is an area that is currently under development, and so that's going to be rather encouraging. And Winamp and the ad remove programs script is really slick. It well, let's listen to Doug. He'll tell us all about it, and then we'll dive into the Winamp presentation. And thanks to JJ finding a bug in the Winamp scripts today. It's been fixed, so good for you. I appreciate that. Fine, that was a good one. So, all right, let's listen to Doug, and then we'll dive into some Miko with Winamp.
We're here with Doug Joffrey, Vice President of Product Development and Support for GW Micro, and there's been a lot of buzz going on this week about the new scripting for the upcoming version of WindowEyes version 7.0. Why don't you tell me about it a little bit?
Scripting? We're having scripting?
I guess so. That's what I hear.
No, actually, we're extremely excited about this scripting. The potential of what this scripting can do. You know, I've always said in the past when I'm doing presentations, you don't need scripting. I kind of, there's these applications that are really crazy out there, and maybe we can get you 90% of the way there with our existing set file configurations and things, and we're still maintaining that. But we see a need that application developers, unfortunately, are not always making their applications accessible, and we need access to that remaining 10%. And so we're going to remain and keep all of our existing configurations, everything that you come to love with WindowEyes will still remain, but we're now adding on the ability of doing full scripting. The nice thing of our scripting language is it's based on COM automation, which is kind of a techie term, but that's kind of the industry standard for making your applications accessible to the outside world. Word has it, Excel has it, Skype has it, even iTunes has a little COM automation interface into it. Many, many applications have that. And what's really cool about it is that you can pick any scripting language or full programming language that supports COM automation.
Wow.
GW Micro will standardize on VBScript, but you could use JScript, you could use full Visual Basic, you could use Perl, Python, C++, C#, anything that supports COM automation that you want to be able to deal with.
What have you been able to accomplish? I know you can't talk a lot about 7.0, but what have you been able to accomplish so far in your testing of the new scripting capabilities?
Well, we're certainly working on some of these ugly applications out there, like music applications, things like that, that we're finding that we can now make scripts to work with some of those. So just out of the box, we did some things with iTunes and got that working fairly well. They still have some issues and things that we need to try to get them to work on. But Sonar, we're taking a look at that. We had one of our beta testers, Jeff Bishop, who actually wrote scripts for Winamp. Makes Winamp work really nice with it right now. And I'm going to be showing that in my session here later this afternoon. And we've just done some cool things like in list views, which already work really well. But we created a real simple script that lets you virtually go around a list view, like an Excel spreadsheet.
Oh, wow.
So I can go left and right by column. I can go up and down by column or whatever, still leave the selection where it was. And then when I find something I want, I can then bring the selection to it or add it to my selection or whatever. We've created a real simple little keyboard macro with WindowEyes for our scripting language. So I can just enable it. It records everything I type. I can hit another key to stop it, and it's now recorded. I can save it off and print it off to whatever I want. We created another simple, these just little simple things were just thrown up like in an hour, but another one we did was for add remove programs. If you've ever used Windows XP and you go to add remove and you want to go down to the W's,
yep.
You can't hit W. You have to
arrow all the way down.
Arrow
yep.
down to the thing. I don't even think you can page down, right?
So, no.
Which is just a pain. So what we did was we created a little script that you just pop it up and we'll populate a list box with all the items in add remove, and it just instantaneously comes up much faster than theirs does even, and you can then go off and do it. So one of the other things we've done with our scripting language is also give you a very powerful user interface to where you can pop up either simple or complex dialogues with complex controls to give the user interface into your scripts and deal with all of that.
I see. So as far as the automatic functionality, you're talking about dialog boxes and popping up additional information. I'm assuming there's also a component where you can have scripts automatically speak information or
make certain keys do certain things at certain times, basically, right?
Oh, absolutely right. So you can have a script be global, so the script will just launch when WindowEyes launches and be out there monitoring for whatever it's monitoring for. It could be key presses, it could be when focus goes into a particular place or certain application gets activation or whatever. Like the list view example I was giving you is a global script. Anytime a list view gets focus, it kicks in and allows you to use its keystrokes. But you can also make them application specific, so they will only launch when the application is active, and then they go away when the application shuts down.
Right, so from a programming techie standpoint, it's kind of like when you're creating a program in Visual Basic and you tie various code to different events, like a mouse click or a keyboard press, and you're doing the same thing here, right?
Right. Most of the scripts will be event-driven, meaning
right.
You're waiting for something, WindowEyes to tell you something happened, whether a clip was rendered or text was rendered to the screen, or a focus change, or a focus went away from something, key press, mouse movement, mouse click, all of this stuff you can monitor, and WindowEyes will fire off an event letting you know that that happened.
Sure, and I anticipate once the public beta is released and 7.0 is released, there'll probably be a lot of user scripts that you'll be willing to share with each other. And
absolutely. We'll create some sort of repository to where individuals can submit them and send that off. But again, the beauty of it is you pick your language. So college students coming out right now are going to know a language that supports COM automation.
Sure.
I guarantee it.
Absolutely.
And so they can just start creating these scripts in any language, and they can combine. You can have a global script that could be, let's say, C++, and you could then have a JScript that's talking to that C++ script. So you can communicate between the two of them there. So it's just really
are they cool. Source code driven, or are they going to be compiled?
Well, pick your language.
Right.
Most
sure.
Scripting languages are now I've lost my terminology.
Right.
They are not compiled. They're at runtime.
Right.
Kind of interpreted. What I was trying to think of.
Yes, yeah, that's the word.
Where C++ could be compiled. VB is typically compiled. So, you know, whatever you pick, it will either be compiled or it will be executed at runtime. But the nice thing we've done with the scripting languages like JScript and VBScript, as long as you, every operating system, by the way, comes with those two.
Yeah.
But if you register any scripting language, WindowEyes automatically embeds the scripting engine into that, so it brings the scripting engine in process to WindowEyes. It's like Windows scripting host is required if you want to run a VB script today without WindowEyes.
Sure.
Well, we basically replace Windows scripting host and script the host directly within WindowEyes, so it gets us much faster. We're in process. It's very fast. We can talk to that script much better. We can give it error messages much cleaner.
And so someone can download a script and not have to worry about downloading all sorts of other components to make sure that it's running.
Well, that's why we're going to default to VB script. But again,
right.
If I had a C++ script that, you know, just an executable, it's not a script, it's really a full-blown programming language,
right.
I could just run it. I don't have to install anything in that case. It's just talking directly to WindowEyes.
Sure, sure.
Mm-hmm.
Other features in 7.0, I know there's been talk of Unicode support as you expand internationally.
Right. So we've now, WindowEyes is now 100% Unicode, which is very cool. So it allows us to get access to any of these applications that might have funny characters in them or whatever. It's amazing how many PDF documents are using really fancy type of characters representing in their text that in the past we would just ignore, for instance. Now we can certainly get those. But if you're reading any sort of text, Korean text or whatever, it's just going to read it. If you've got a Korean synthesizer, it will now read it correctly for you.
That's great. What about other things on the horizon? There's a lot of movement towards Web 2.0 and Google Docs and spreadsheets, and there's also OpenOffice, which is coming out. Have you made any progress in that area, or will the scripts help out in these areas?
They could potentially help out, but one of the other things, too, that I'll back up just a little bit in our IE stuff that we've added is the ability to be able to jump to controls on a web page. So our insert tab, which is our page navigation, which already let you go to many different types of elements on your page.
Right.
Now we've added controls to that. So
okay.
I can jump to whatever edit box I want to go into or whatever. And we've also added the ability to be able to navigate quickly to, let's say, the third unchecked checkbox or
take me to
the fifth button or whatever that I want to be able to deal with. You can do that. We've also added bookmarks to allow you to be able to bookmark certain points on web pages. What makes our bookmarks unique, I believe, is that we can actually go searching. So we don't just store the line number and blindly take you to that line number on the
right.
page, which we can do if that's what you want. But we also give you the option that says, if it's not there, then go still search for it. And so we store some data of what the original bookmark had on it. We'll go look for the closest thing that was on, well, the closest line that matches where that line originally was.
Sure.
And we'll put focus on it. So that's very cool.
Definitely.
But scripting obviously was our biggest thing. And so now that we've got the scripting component done with it and get 7.0 out, then I'm going to be looking 100% at ARIA and hopefully some Java support at that point, be able to get those other components that I've also wanted for a long time as well. But the ARIA stuff is going to be huge.
Sure. For one thing at a time. Yes.
Exactly. We want to make sure we do one thing, do it well, get it out, make it stable. We don't have to be fixing our problems of that release. You know, we want to work on the next stuff.
Sure. And when can we expect a public beta for 7.0?
I always get that one.
I know you don't like dates.
Our current goal is to hopefully be in public beta by CSUN. That's my goal.
Right.
And then public betas usually last between 1 and 2 months, depending on what kind of issues and things like that we find.
Right.
So that kind of gives you a little time frame. But again, we don't have a board of directors that says you must get this out because we want our bottom line to be, you know, this much this quarter. We don't do that. So we put it out when it's ready.
All right. Well, thank you so much. How can we get in contact with GW Micro?
Well, you can certainly give us a call at area code 260-489-3671, or you can send us email at info@gwmicro.com or support@gwmicro.com or sales@gwmicro.com. Just about anything at GW Micro. And of course, our webpage is just www.gwmicro.com.
Doug, it's been a pleasure.
Very much. Thank you very much.
All right, now let's see. Let's bring our panel back here. So Doug kind of did a brief overview here of really what the language is all about. It's really not a language, but more an API, for a scripting language to be used. And I can tell you from a standard standpoint, that's extremely powerful because you have IT people who now can write code who are used to talking to object models, Word, Excel, PowerPoint, Outlook, other, business SAP type applications have object models, that type of a thing. So the industry is well aware of what's capable in programming an object model. So I was pretty excited about that.
Guys, there is a neat, I saw this on the GW-info mailing list. If you go to gwmicro.com/scripting, they've already got some tutorial material up there.
Yes, they do.
And
they'll have more. There's going to be, as Doug talked about, there'll be a repository for people to be able to contribute and also download scripts. And it's pretty exciting. You guys got any comments on this?
No, I think it's definitely the open architecture, as you mentioned. That's definitely the big thing. You won't really have to learn a new language if you're already into programming. You could use any language you wanted. And I think that's definitely the biggest part of it. Now, some people have said that make it more susceptible to viruses, but I think, any program that has scripts could have a virus if you really want to. As long as you're careful, it shouldn't be any problems at all.
Well, I mean, you could even write JAWS scripts that would be considered a virus. I mean...
Sure. Well, you can even crash Eloquence. You can apparently write a Trojan horse that crashes all your screen readers.
Yeah, so, I mean, this comes down to making sure that you trust the people who you get your things from. You go to reputable sites. You obtain the material from people that you know. And our community is small enough that I don't really think that's going to be an issue. But to put people's minds at ease, because, of course, a lot of viruses come from VBScript and JavaScript and stuff like that. GW Micro has said that security has always been at the upfront in their mind, and they will address it before the release. So it will be part of the release. They will do, there will be something in place that protects everybody. So be
sure,
rest assured that they're not going to put something out there that, is going to put their customers in danger. That's for sure. All right. Well, what I'd like to do now, and I'll keep you guys here. So if you have any specific comments, then you can ask away. But what I'd like to do is I have Windows Explorer open here, and I have WindowEyes beta here running on this machine. Let me get the mixer going here so that we can hear everything. And I have the best of Miko. Yeah, yeah. So this kind of takes me back to the 80s, huh? Yeah. And so this, they did disco basically. And so they had Star Wars and and Empire Strikes Back themes and Star Trek and Close Encounters of the Third Kind. Anyway, and I thought, well, I'm going to use this to demonstrate with, because they have one track that's about 16 minutes long, and that's kind of good because I need a long track for part of the demonstration. We're not going to spend a great deal of time on this, but I wanted to show you kind of the things that Doug showed during his presentation to give you an idea of what is capable in the Winamp scripts. The Winamp scripts currently are about 50K in size, and there are no DLLs or anything required. Everything is encapsulated inside of just the one script. The really nice thing about the WindowEye scripting language is that it has UI element capabilities in it, and we'll show that to you. But you can create dialogues that have list boxes and combo boxes and check boxes, and you can have multi-selection list boxes and edit boxes, and you can restrict the type of content that goes in the edit boxes. Like, you can make them look like password fields. And
is that with VBScript or JScript or both?
Doesn't matter. The language is independent, so you could either do it with VBScript or JScript.
This is coming from WindowEye.
This is coming from WindowEye, right.
Right,
And the way that these are built is completely accessible because it's all done. I can't get into specifics because Doug said, do not get into specifics. But I will, on the programming pieces. But I will tell you that it is very, very accessible. If you can write text in a text editor, then you can create a dialogue box. And the dialogue boxes are pretty nicely sized, so you don't have to worry about, you know, I need to make sure that the text box is 4 pixels over to the right or anything weird like that. Mm-hmm. It handles a lot of the layout for you. And it's really nice. So let's go ahead and get started here. I am going to open up the playlist here.
Context menu.
And I'm going to play in Winamp.
P. Menu closed. List.
All right, so let me get over to Winamp here.
Local disk at 1 period.
There we are. Let me turn it down a little bit. Now, so as you can hear, we're listening to Star Wars, and you're saying, well, why do we need scripts for Winamp anyway? Well, first of all, one of the things that was a problem was that a lot of times some of the graphics that were inside of Winamp were specifically designed for specific color depths. So if you wanted to be able to hear the repeat status, then you had to make sure that the graphics were specifically set for your color depth. Now, GW Micro shipped the most common things, but sometimes they didn't work. Now we go directly to Winamp and we get the information.
R, repeat mode on. R, repeat mode off.
As well as shuffle.
S, shuffle mode on. S, shuffle mode off. Graphic.
One of the things that you can do now is you can actually get different time type information. So I can hit a key.
T, system time.
You can get system time.
T, total track time. T, elapsed track time. T, remaining track time.
So let's get total track time.
T, total track time.
And I'll hit another key to do that.
T, 3 minutes and 47 seconds.
So this obviously is the shorter version of the Star Wars song. Let's find out what else we can get here.
T, elapsed track time. T, 1 minute and 27 seconds.
And then?
T, remaining track time. T, 2 minutes and 14 seconds.
That's how many minutes are left. Now, you can add bookmarks. These are timed bookmarks, and we'll show you what you can do here. Let's go ahead and add one. I'm going to pause this. You don't need to pause it, but just so that you can hear things well, I'm going to go ahead and pause.
C, paused.
And it tells you that it's paused. I'm going to press the letter M.
M, time bookmark key, edit box, dialogue, add time bookmark.
And I can give it a name.
T, I-E space, S-T-A-R space, W-A-R-S space, 1.
Time Star Wars 1. And if I hit tab.
Add, A, button.
There's an add button. And this is all done through the WindowEye's UI model, and I'll press the space bar.
Space. Time marker bookmark entitled Time Star Wars 1 added. 1 Miko dash Star Wars.
So let's go forward in the song a little bit.
C. C.
And we'll pause and we'll add another one.
M. Time bookmark key. T I E space S A R space W A S R.
Oops.
R A R S space 2 add space. Time marker bookmark entitled Time Star Wars 2 added.
So we now have two timed bookmarks, and we can open up a list box here by pressing another key, and I'm not giving the keys right now because they're subject to change. This entire script is really subject to change, but I need to get feedback from our users to find out what they think about these keystrokes. So let's go ahead and press this key, and up comes a list.
Cam, please wait. Loading time bookmarks. Two timed bookmarks loaded.
So here they are. There's two timed bookmarks loaded. We're inside of a list box.
Time Star Wars 1152. What?
So it tells you the name and the time location.
Time Star Wars 2220.
And 2 minutes and 20 seconds. And there are a bunch of controls in here. I'll tab to the dialog box.
Jump. J. Button.
You can jump to that time.
Edit. E. Button.
You can edit that time bookmark.
Remove time bookmark. R.
You can remove it.
Remove all time bookmarks for current track.
You can remove all of the bookmarks for the selected track or the currently playing track.
Cancel. C. Button. Select a time.
And then we're back to the list box. Now, once you click on edit, it actually allows you to then get to specific fields. And it's just like you were inside of an application. It looks just like that. Visually, it looks just like a Windows dialog box. Let's go ahead and cancel.
Space.
And I'm going to play again here.
C. Resume.
And I'm going to fast forward a little bit. And I'm going to now move back by bookmarks.
B. Bookmark time star.
Let me actually turn it up here so you can hear it. So I moved back one.
C. At first bookmark.
So I'm at the first bookmark.
F. Bookmark time star wars 2 selected.
And as you can see, you can jump back and forth between time bookmarks. And we're going to work more on that, actually. There's going to be even more functionality there. But one of the other things that you can do is you can do relative time jumps. And you can do that by selecting either by minutes or seconds, and it's a combination of both. So here I can go ahead. Let's actually move
system menu
to the longer version, longer song.
Next, next, next.
Here we are. This song here is about 15 minutes in length. And I want to jump by two-minute increments.
1 minute, 2 minutes.
And I want to check my seconds here. It's
8 seconds, 7 seconds.
So I'm decrementing.
2 seconds, 1 second, 0 seconds.
So I want to jump by 2 minute increments, and I'm going to turn the volume up here. And as you can see, we're now going to jump. So we're jumping by 2 minute increments. And you can control this. I could go
1 minute.
I want 1 minute increments. So we're now going backward, and then we're at the beginning of the track. And this information is stored. So once you've made these selections, it's actually stored somewhere, so you don't have to do it again. One of the other areas that we worked really hard on to make sure that it was really accessible is the Winamp playlist. Because if you are currently using the Winamp set files, you'll notice that sometimes it's not as reliable as it could be. This has to do with the fact that the Winamp playlist does not scroll by default, meaning that when you get to the bottom of the list and you continue to move a track, it actually is not visually seen. So even sighted people have a difficult time actually being able to utilize this feature very well. It's sort of annoying. So let's go ahead and open up the playlist.
E. Playlist window opened.
So it's open, and I'm going to now go ahead and control tab there.
Winamp playlist editor.
And I'm going to press home.
1 period.
Now I'm just using the arrow keys.
2 period, 3 period, current track 4 period. Miko dash medley colon Star Wars 1549 is playing.
So it tells you that it's playing, and if I paused it.
C, paused.
And if I go up and back.
Current track 4 period. Miko dash medley colon Star Wars 1549 is paused.
It tells you that it's paused. And if I were to go to the bottom of the playlist,
C,
let's do that.
11 period, 14 period,
and start playing that song. And let's say I was moving around in the playlist. A lot of our DJs on Interactive do this. And they want to be able to get back to the currently playing track. You can hit a key.
J. Attempting to move to track 14 in the playlist from the top to the bottom.
Ah, it's going to fail on
J.
you, is it?
Current track 14, period. Miko-Spooky-326 is playing.
There we are. Sometimes it takes a little bit of time. That's mainly due to the way that it scrolls the Winamp window. So, now you can move tracks. So I can hold down the Alt key and move down the playlist. I'm currently highlighting the first track.
2 period. Miko-Star Wars theme slash Cantina Band 347. 3 period. Miko-Star Wars theme slash Cantina Band 347. 4 period. Miko-Star Wars theme slash Cantina Band 347. 5 period. Repo-Star Wars.
And that person will have to wait a second. So as you can see
six
here,
Repo-Star Wars theme slash canton of random.
We're only showing 6 items, and if I move down again,
7 period. Repo-Star Wars theme slash canton of random 3.
The window has scrolled, and WindowEyes has handled that perfectly fine. Let's close the playlist.
14 repo.
So this is just some basic things that we can do here using the WinApp scripts. There's a heck of a lot more.
Stop.
There's plenty of documentation that we're providing and going to be able to give to the user. But this kind of gives you an idea of what the scripting can what the scripting can do, and it can actually do a heck of a lot more. Us beta testers have only had access to betas that have had scripting in them for just a few weeks, actually. So this has all been done in a very relatively short period of time. So we're pretty excited about it. So, guys, have any comments?
How does it compare? I never really got a chance to use the JAWS WinApp scripts. How does the functionality compare?
Well, a lot of them have a lot of these features were because obviously users probably used those, and a lot of them wanted the same types of features. So, what I tried to do was ensure that we got all of those. Someone's IMing me here. Let me turn that down. Getting a little distracted. Okay. What I tried to do was to bring as much of that functionality across, but also enhance it. So, for example, a lot of the time bookmark features and a lot of the editing capability of those and moving back and forth and that type of a thing, as well as the playlist. There's going to be some special features there.
Toonhead asked about the media library.
Yeah, unfortunately, that's going to require an actual WinApp plugin to be able to gain access to that area. The way that we're actually getting at the information that we can get to with WinApp is through documented API calls that the WinApp SDK provides. And unfortunately, to be able to get to the WinApp media library, it would require someone to write a WinApp DLL and actually ship a WinApp plugin, just like you would install. Probably it would probably be a general purpose plugin in that specific case. And unfortunately,
wow.
I'm not a real good C programmer, and all the stuff's written, all the SDKs written for C stuff. So it's kind of a frightening task for me. But not to say that someone won't do it. It's just that this won't be something that I will do.
So there isn't anything. There's no object model for that section, and there's no
WinApp doesn't use
screen scraping that can be done. Or
yeah, WinApp really doesn't use an object model. It's all done through API Windows API calls. So it's not like you have objects and properties and methods and ways of getting at information.
Oh,
it's,
you don't. Okay.
It's not. If it were that easy, I would do it. Unfortunately, it's not that easy, but. Uh-huh. Perhaps
someone could do it.
Sure, absolutely. It won't be mm-hmm. me. it's an area that I don't have enough expertise in, unfortunately. But we'll have a lot more to say on this. Doug Joffrey and Aaron from GW Micro will be joining us on March 4th, and they'll be with us for 1 or 2 hours. We're yet to determine that. I need to get with Aaron and get it all figured out. But they'll be here on March 4th, and we will also have some pretty exciting announcements about things that we're going to do on Main Menu to assist users in scripting. So stay tuned for that. We'll give you all a heads up during that week on March 4th. It's definitely something you don't want to miss. So we have a caller, and I have not screened the call, but let's go ahead and take it. Oh, they are gone. Caller, if you want to call back, 866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF. We'd love to talk with you. And that's pretty much the WinApp demo that I wanted to do.
Can you start and stop the playlist with a keystroke like you can in JavaScript? Stop the playlist at a
That's a WinApp feature. That's a WinApp feature. Yeah, that's not specific.
Oh, okay. Toonhead's asking about that.
Yeah, that's not specific to the JavaScripts, at least not that I'm aware of. Although I could be. If he wants to mention something, then you know, a specific command, we can look into that, or he can get TuneHead. You can get with me later, and I'll let you know anything you want on that, or send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. Let's go ahead and take this call here, and let's hope it's not my wife at the Target. Hello, Main Menu.
Good evening. This is Walter Grams. I'm from the Buffalo, New York area, suburb
Hello.
Of Buffalo, New York. And I've got WindowEyes right now, a 6.1 that I'm using with Windows XP Pro.
Okay.
And does the new version of WindowEyes, or will the new version of WindowEyes 7.0 work with Access?
Microsoft Access?
Yes.
I have not personally done anything as far as scripting with it or anything like that. I know that there are currently MS Access set files currently available. I don't know what's going to happen in reference to the timeline for version 7. That's really something that you can address with Doug when he's here on March 4th.
Okay, you know, a lot of people have asked, I noticed on the list, about working with specific programs. And Doug really hasn't said much about any specific programs, but the scripts will make a lot more things possible. And once the public beta is out, and give it a couple months, there probably will be a lot more programs that are supported.
Yeah, I mean, keep in mind that Access has Visual Basic for Applications, which basically means, of course, that you have basically the full power to get to WindowEyes.
Yeah.
And so we're getting a comment from one of the beta testers that I don't really want to mention here, but
oh no, of course not. No, I have just one more quick question. If I could bounce back to the cell phones last
sure.
week, I was looking at the Mobile Speak Pocket software with AT&T, and very impressed with the software. I'm right now using an LG VX4500 phone. Of course, the menus talk, but the submenus do not speak, so that's where it kind of gets me discouraged, you know, that they could have gone that one step further and made the whole phone accessible as opposed to just a part of it. And I have big fingers and big hands, and I didn't find the N75 phone to be, you know, what I would call, you know, very blind user friendly, in that I found the buttons to be almost flat with the main board of the phone, the surrounding board of the body of the phone. They're not, you know, they weren't very raised. Well, the numeric keypad wasn't real bad, but the problem that I found was the function keys, you know, your right and left soft key, your send and end and clear and edit keys. They were not hardly raised at all, in my opinion. Question is the N82 phone, does it have more raised buttons than the N75?
Okay, we'll let you listen on the air, all right?
Thanks.
Okay, great. What do you guys know? Is it more raised?
The actual numeric keypad, yeah, is definitely more raised. As for the rest of the phone, I wouldn't say it's any worse than the 75. Personally, I'm looking at my 75 right now, and if I use the tips of my fingers, the real tips of my fingers, that seems to be the best way to find the little divots between the buttons on the phone. And I think the 82, I would find them usable, but then again, I'm also not a person that is particularly particular about buttons and how tactile apart they are from each other.
Yeah, I don't remember them being bad. I remember feeling the phone, and I don't remember thinking that I didn't like the buttons, so I don't remember anything specific, but...
We have a message from Jamie.
Okay.
And he's asking, anything you can tell us about Windows 7.0 with Skype? Has the chat support been improved? Is there anything that can be done through additional scripting and so on and so forth?
I think it's possible. I haven't seen anything. But Skype's another program that has a strong API. So, and if anyone's familiar with SK Read, knows that it's possible to hook into Skype, so I wouldn't be surprised if someone does it at some point.
But Skype also uses MFAA, although I don't know what they expose there. But
well, I don't know what I can say here. That's the problem. I will say here that Skype is definitely an application that is well known within GW Micro, and let's just leave it at that.
Okay.
Yeah. It's probably best to. You might want to ask Aaron that question on March 4th. I know that some things have been looked into. So let's go ahead and bring in our next caller here, and let's see. Hello, welcome to Main Menu Live.
Hi guys, good show.
Hey John, how's it going?
We're all good.
One of our Mac guys.
Well, just
hi John.
What I find that interesting is I could actually use a Mac programming in Perl and port that over to WindowEyes.
That's right. You could in theory write code on the Mac and have it go talk to the Windows version of WindowEyes.
Yeah, but that's not really why.
that would be cool.
Yeah, would it? The reason I called is somebody mentioned Access, and I know one of your beta testers did. I just got a different job at the company where I work. It's in the IT department. We're logging all of our calls in Access. And even using WindowEyes with the numeric keypad, believe it or not, it's actually easy to log the calls.
It works pretty well, actually. Access.
Yeah, it's there's parts where it's kind of generic, but it actually works quite well. And I'm really excited when I heard that little message coming in about Access, because that really makes a big difference.
There's the set files have not changed from version 6 to version 7. At this point, anyway, that I'm aware of.
The set files that I found are for Access 97.
One of the few Micro's beta testers is a person who works on the Access scripts, and I can assure you that work continues to go on them, and it actually works pretty
well. That's exciting. Jeff, one real quick thing.
Yep.
You better have... Oh, Steve, I don't remember whoever does the announcements. You guys are now at 1 Universal Time, not 2 Universal Time.
Well, we normally are. Main Menu Live normally is it.
Oh, that's why. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But for the last few weeks, we've been sort of moving things around.
Yeah, and your live feed is a little gravelly. I don't know if you can monitor that at all or not.
Well, it's the phone port. When people come on live on the phone side, it's because of the way that things are done here.
Well, but I mean, after I think Walter hung up, it was really gravelly just with you and the panel.
That's interesting. Yeah, okay, well.
Keep up. It's a good show, and I'm really excited about the Access, and I just want to make a comment on that.
Yeah, okay, thanks, John.
You're welcome.
All right, we'll catch you later. All right, bye-bye. 866-400-5333. Daryl, can you have Karen check the screen?
I don't know if it's necessarily, I actually don't think it's the stream, but when I'm listening here on Skype, I think that sometimes what I'm hearing through Skype is a little choppy, so if that's the case, I think that's where it's coming from.
All right, let's bring in our next caller here. We're sorry about that, everybody. We're not sure what the technical glitch is, but all right, let's see. Hello, caller, welcome to Main Menu Live.
My good friend, Mr. Jeff Bishop. This is Jesse.
Hey, Jesse, how's it going?
Another one of your Mac guys.
That's right.
No, I just thought to say that great show, even though I caught it just as I was getting out of work. Ironically enough, I'm looking, and I don't know if anyone here can help me out with this. I'm looking for a program that will allow me to stream such as ACB radio on my smartphone. And because I don't know if I told you this, but I recently just upgraded my Blackjack to Windows Mobile 6, and one of the unique things now about Windows Mobile 6 is that they have fixed Windows Media to support YouTube now.
Okay.
but it will not play ACB radio. As a matter of fact, when I go to ACB radio and I click on the listen link, it'll go something about, oh, this file may be either corrupted or Windows Media does not support it. And I'm like, okay, that's cool, because I can play this very well on my PC and on my Mac. So it's got to be something with the smartphone. So what I was trying to find was if there's anything that I can use to play other types of streaming audio on my phone. I know that there is. There's got to be. I guess I haven't looked.
All right. JJ, do you have any comments on that?
As far as the media player, I'm not familiar with one. I'm not sure. Was there another question there? But I'm not familiar with any sort of workaround for that.
Okay.
Okay. No. I was just curious. I mean,
There is now you may check out. I don't have a website for this right now, but and I don't know if this has been updated recently. But there's a free program that used to be out there called GS Player. I've used that on my Pac-Mate from time to time.
Yeah, but remember, Pac-Mate, Daryl, uses Windows for Pocket PC devices.
Right, so they may have released a new version of a GS Player, so you might want to check that out.
Do you know what version was out? I'm seeing a GS Player 2.24, which looks like it might be for Windows Mobile 6.
And by the way, Jeff, sorry to tell you this, but your audio on my, not on the phone, but on my computer,
it's not sounding good.
Really, really staticky.
We're not sure why either.
Sounds like something like, you know, like when your sound card starts to crackle.
Yeah.
Sounds like that. I mean, I'm just alerting you to it because I'm hearing it right now on my end, on the feed. And I was like, ooh, this sounds awkward.
Yeah.
But this time, I'm just making aware that also that I'm noticing it on my end. Yeah.
And it's coming, and it's fairly clear. And it's coming from our, it's coming from our main feed, too, and I double-checked that, too. So.
Yeah, I just checked the uplink, too.
So I'm not sure,
Okay,
anyway. Well, it looks like GS Player was just updated a couple months ago, so it is still being maintained. I sent the link over to get up on Twitter. So.
Okay, great. I'll take care of that. Thank you very much.
Okay, good.
All right, so I was just calling just to congratulate you guys on the show. Like I said, I'm going to have to listen to the replay now when it comes on later on because I missed. If there were any announcements, I actually missed them because I was at work about the APIA conference and stuff. So I'm going to have to listen to that on the archives now when the replay comes up.
Okay.
To hear what nice things were talked about in the APIA.
Good.
All righty, buddy.
All right, guys.
See you later, guys.
All right.
Good luck.
Mm-hmm, thanks.
Bye.
866-400-5333, 866-400-JEFF, and again, we're sorry about this, everybody. Let's move on to talking about air, and Daryl, you want to kick in on that?
All right, so we have one of the items that was released at ATIA is the new AIR, Accessibility is a Right Foundation, and essentially comes down to right now is that a version world, and Saratech has donated that to AIR, which is a separate foundation, and then there it is available in English, and there will soon be additional translations of System Access to Go, and so System Access to Go is the screen reader that you can run from your website, from your web browser by just hitting Windows R and going to www.sa2go.com and pressing enter. And you can get, if you have internet access, you can have a free screen reader. They're also working on partnerships. Learned recently that Lenovo laptops, ThinkPad laptops and such may soon have a built-in System Access to Go screen reader.
Yes.
And then they're going to be doing some work with accessibility evangelism and some other exciting things that I believe are in the works as well.
Yeah, so it's free screen reader, everybody. It's pretty cool stuff.
And the static is gone, so we're being told
yes,
now.
Yeah, it was streamer here, guys, so I stopped and restarted it, and it appears to have corrected itself. So,
and just to clarify, I know there's been some different stories floating around. Well, AIR is its own foundation, and I know they're open to other members, but it was created by Serotech. So, I mean,
right.
Exactly.
Full disclosure, yeah. It probably should be noted that they were the ones behind the creation of the foundation.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, and there's a FAQ section of the website is available at accessibilityisaright.org, there's a FAQ section that says, you know, is this controlled by Serotech? And they say, you know, though we helped to found the foundation, it is ultimately going to be independent. And in fact, they're inviting other companies who would like to make something available for free to hook up with the AIR Foundation.
Absolutely.
Yes.
And there's a lot more content up at blindbargains.com. And I wanted to give both... Now, Matt, do you work on Blind Bargains, too?
Yeah, I do work on Blind Bargains. So.
Okay, cool. So we wanted to spend at least, you know, 5 or 6 minutes talking about the Blind Bargains website, too. And for those that have not visited it, why don't you guys give us a rundown as to what it is, how it works, and what people can find there.
Sure. I'll start out, and I'm sure Matt will jump in at some point. Started out about a year ago. Well, we were sitting around. We're both roommates, actually, and we were sitting around our apartment.
Yeah, we're both really poor college students. So I mean, you know, we're both sitting around actually, and we were wanting a site where we could find the best deals on things, and obviously there are mainstream sites around that we use sometimes to find deals on hard drives and USB flash drives and all that, but there wasn't a site where you could find assistive technology products like Braille Notes and Pac-Mates and things like that. So we decided to create it and to create a site where we would conglomerate all the best deals related to assistive technology and products that we thought and that other people wanted to buy and purchase. So
because a lot of times you'll see like some of the sites that specifically sell to the blind, they'll bring in products and sometimes unfortunately they'll have to mark them up to break even or whatever, so yeah. They might have a talking watch, but you might be able to find the same talking watch at Amazon for half the price. So we'll look at all that, and we'll see what we can find is the cheapest.
A good example of that was the Hamilton Beach talking microwave. You know, I mean, Walmart had it for $60 on clearance. A couple of these other companies sold them for, you know, twice that price, and obviously it was their right to do so. But we also had the right to post the $60 Walmart deal for those who are also interested. So, I mean, yeah.
Blind Bargains is really, really great. They even post. You even find sometimes there's stuff available on eBay, which, of course, you know, you get at your own risk. But, hey, it's out there.
I bought a Power Braille 65 off eBay for $60. So, I mean, you can find some good stuff.
Did it work?
I think it does. I haven't tried it yet.
Uh-huh. Sometimes when you pay so little for these things, you forget to try them out because it's like, okay, now what do I do with it? It was, you know, it was $60. I might as well buy it, but now what do I do with it? That actually came. I had the Auction Gateway site. It was up for about a year before Blind Bargain, so that's kind of where it started. And then after seeing how the eBay site went over, then we decided to expand to Blind Bargains, and now. Blind Bargains, which at first did mostly just deals, we've expanded even more now into doing news and interviews too. So just keep kind of gradually getting a bit bigger.
Now, how do you guys run the Zone BBS also, right?
I do. It's not the two are not really affiliated, other than the fact that I help oversee both of them.
So tell us, JJ, how do you actually find all these? Do you just have a bunch of Google alerts, or what is your madness?
Yeah, a combination of RSS feeds and scouring some of the mainstream sites and doing some of our own searching too on through eBay or through Amazon. And now it's just like just more popular. We get tips from readers who will send in, yep. or in some of the companies themselves actually now will let us know
yes,
about products.
Yeah, some of the companies will actually send us special blind bargains promotions. So that's kind of cool when we get our own little promotional code or, you know.
That is cool. So there's other sites that do this for mainstream software too. You know, there's sites that BitDeJour. Have you guys been over there?
Never heard of that one. Deal News was probably the first one I started visiting a long time ago. Cheap Stingy Bargains, Slick Deals. There's a whole bunch, and now there's aggregators for those.
Yeah, there's a website, BitDeJour, and it basically they have software deals each day. And man, they've had some pretty amazing discounts on stuff. Huge discounts, like 60-70% off on things. That's pretty cool stuff. Definitely a site that if you're an RSS reader, definitely you want to add it to your. Darryl, I'll get you the link to add to main menu on that. It's quite good. So, yeah.
I mean, it's nice to see though that we're kind of a hybrid website blog, but it's nice to see how, well, you both have, knowing this, you know, both having blogs yourself, it's nice to see the coverage that's being given. There's a good number of blogs out there for the blind now, from Fred's Head to Ranger to a whole bunch of others.
Yep.
And it's nice to see that there's a fair amount of resources out there now.
Well, we really appreciated you, and that must have cost you guys a pretty penny to, you know, go out there. And,
yeah, it did.
Yeah, and go on. Yeah. You know,
and all the
coverage.
School, you know, all the missed school, but
yeah, no
that's
kidding.
Story,
yeah.
So.
Let me ask you something real quick about blind bargains, if you don't mind. Do you get a lot of feedback? Do you get very much participation? And do people in the community donate to help keep the site running?
The site's self-supporting at this point. It depends. We get a fair amount of email. We have probably 200 or 300 on our daily deals list, and we get maybe a few comments a day. We ran you might have seen, we did the Blind Bargains Access Awards throughout January, and we had well over 100 people submitting votes in for that. So that was nice to see that people were watching the site and helping to pick the best products and websites of the year.
Great.
Well, very cool.
We've been pretty overwhelmed, actually. It's over the last couple months, especially. It's really
it's really taken off. So I mean, and especially during Asia, I mean, our traffic just spiked over the past week. So I mean,
well, yeah, when you guys did a really bang up job, I really do want to commend all of you for putting all that up and man, you were up in the wee hours of the night posting that stuff.
Yeah. Yes, I was. It was like about 2 a.m. Like, well, man, we got to get this stuff up now. And
yeah, it was crazy stuff. So
it was.
Yeah, good stuff. So
we actually still have, and there's still even a couple more to put up. There's a really interesting interview I want to mention quickly. Sometimes it's the stuff that you're not even looking for when you were there. I ran into a company. I was actually looking for another table, but I ran into a company called SCOM, and they've developed a product that allows a totally deaf person with using a computer and a screen to talk to a totally blind person using a computer and a braille display. And I got an interview with them that's going up. And I mean, sometimes I wasn't even looking for that, but that's probably about one of the most interesting things I saw there.
Yeah, no, that's kind of neat.
It is neat. So are you going to go to CSUN?
I think I'm about out of money, and I'm not sure if I can miss another week of school this year. I'd love to do it, but I think I might have to wait a year for that one.
Now, what are you both studying? Just be curious.
Telecommunications.
Yeah, I'm also in telecommunications and looking to probably get a technology job. That was another side effect of Asia. I got to take down resumes. So.
Oh, good. Yeah, that's good. Yeah, get your self known out there.
Sure.
And you're especially. I mean, you've been around a long time, and you're quite well known in the industry, and we appreciate
for better
you.
Or for worse.
No, I only know of good. So, and that's a good thing. We're definitely going to have you guys back, and especially
definitely, it's been a pleasure. So.
Yeah, it's been fun. We'll have to have you back, especially especially into the holidays when you guys are going to be doing, you know, your big extravaganza deals and stuff for Christmas time.
Oh, yeah.
Time.
Our newsletter that went on Black Friday, I think, had usually we have 5 or 10 in a day, and that one had about 30 or 40.
Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah,
man.
That just had a ton.
You just went nuts. So, good job.
Yeah, and do go, if you're listening, do go to blindbargains.com. There's the RSS feed and an email list that either way works, or just stop by. Almost every day of the week, we posted new stuff up there.
Yeah, yeah.
And let us know what you want to see.
Especially if you're into memory cards and stuff, he tends to find these things. Yes. They're
dropping in price all the time. So
yeah, it's crazy, man. You posted a 4 gig USB thumb drive for something like $24 or something the other
day.
That's
amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, that's.
They're 19 right now. It's $19.95 at Bite.com.
Going up in a day or two, there's a 32 gig compact flash for $130.
Yeah. Well, wow. I won't tell you what I paid for my 2 4 gig cards.
We've all been there.
Yeah, no kidding.
I paid $220 for a 400 megabyte hard drive. So.
Oh yeah, I know that
was back
too.
In the days.
Oh, indeed. Yep. All right. Well, we'll be back next week with another new show. We're going to have Earl Harrison on for sure, and he's going to be talking to us more about the KNFB reader and all kinds of other great stuff. So, and I think we're going to be. Well, not sure. He may be here for the 1 or 2 hours. That's unknown at this point. But we'll definitely have another piece of the show next week. We'll let you know. Keep an eye on the announce lists. There's been some changes on the list, sir, so you'll notice the name of the list in the subject now. So get yourselves on the announce list or the friends list or the main menu friends list. You can find out more about that by visiting the website. So we'll see you all next week. And... I'm going to be up late watching election results. Fun stuff, huh? Have any closing comments, Daryl?
I think that's it, everybody. If you want to check out, mainmenu.acbradio.org, it's essentially our website and blog. And it's been great having Matt and Jason on here. So thank you again for coming on.
We'll piece together the podcast feed here and try to assemble it into parts. Unfortunately, it's going to be in 3 pieces that I'm going to have to juggle with, but we'll get it up there. So for those of you who want to be able to download the content, it will be available to you shortly. Stay tuned for that. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
If you would like to contact the Main Menu production team or panel of experts heard this evening on Main Menu Live, then simply send an email to mainmenu@acbradio.org. That's mainmenu@acbradio.org. If you have suggestions for topics or you have questions that you would like to have addressed on a future edition of Main Menu Live, then email us and we'll do what we can to answer them or cover your suggested topics on a future Main Menu Live. Thanks for listening, and we hope you'll join us next week on ACB Radio Mainstream for another Main Menu Live.